We're all looking to make more sustainable choices, but making your own shoes out of natural materials could pose a few challenges. The twigs and leaves in your yard aren't exactly comfortable, and while mud does perfectly contour the feet, it doesn't score high on the durability front. But thanks to Allbirds, you can skip all the backyard experimentation. At the Allbirds Innovation Lab, they're doing all the sciencey stuff like research and testing to create shoes from natural, sustainable materials. And their innovative processes mean using less of the bad stuff and more of the good, while making shoes unlike any other. Like the Plant Pacer, made with 100% plastic-free plant leather. The Tree Dasher, a running shoe made from eucalyptus tree fiber. And from sugarcane, they've made the Superlight, their lightest shoe ever by weight and carbon footprint. It's not rocket science, it's shoe science. Allbirds is making shoes better than natural. They're supernatural. Find your perfect pair at Allbirds.com today. That's Allbirds.com.
This is the Hip Hop Saved My Life podcast. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Hope you enjoy the podcast. Now sit back, because it's time for the podcast.
Welcome to Hip Hop Saved My Life. I'm here with Rue Madge. How are you?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I got elbowed in the face this morning.
By accident?
Yes, by accident, but it was really hard. I was on the tube.
Yeah.
And it came to a sudden stop, and this guy just fucking cracked me straight in the face.
I've done that to someone the other way around.
What do you mean?
On the Northern Line, I fell back, elbowed someone, a girl, and she started crying.
She started crying?
Yeah, for the whole of the trip. I was just like, feeling terrible.
Oh my God. But you stayed on. I would have just got off at the next station. Yeah, of course I would.
I just like to
see women
cry.
You don't want to fucking see that. Speaking of assaults on public transport, we have got one of our favourite guys. Now listen.
Favourite assaulters.
This guy, he is such a good bloke. He came on this podcast when it's fucking nothing.
When we were recording it on our laptops.
Yeah, when we had like three listeners.
Yeah.
He came on, he gave up his time. He's making the best music of his career right now, so we had to have him back on. It's Michael Payne. Hello, mate.
Hello, mate.
How you doing?
People might have heard me stifling my laughter during that conversation.
First return guest.
Yeah, you're our first second part.
Serious?
Yeah.
We need to give him something, some sort of.
Yes, we will. I'll give you this Beer 52 sponsorship form that I've got to read the advert for later.
People will come in handy.
Yeah. How are you, man?
Yeah, good. You know, good. I was just, I've had your little story on my mind since you told it about getting on the train and elbow.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Go on.
And I would have stayed on. I just want to make that clear.
Why?
Because if I got off, it would have looked intentional.
That's true.
No, but you'd pull up and you go, oh, this is me. You sort of just say it. You sort of act it out, wouldn't you?
Yeah,
give a little bit of a.
I'd just like say it and just be like, "Are you all right?" But if I got off, it would look like someone would make a meme out of that.
Oh, I see what you're
saying.
And
then it would be the fun.
So you get
music.
On, you crack someone in the head, and then walk off. Yeah, that's a bad look.
I don't want to be a meme. Rule number one in this modern age is don't become a meme.
Yeah.
And
I get nervous sometimes when I'm in the car. I get nervous because I don't know if you know a comedian called Paul McCaffrey. This has nothing to do with him being in the car, but he did a show called Impractical Jokers.
And yeah, I've heard of the show.
Yeah, so that went massive. It was the British version of the American show.
Uh-huh.
And it went massive. And then somebody took a photo of him just eating a burger in Nando's. And it was absolutely. I'm sure Paul won't mind me saying this. It's one of the worst photos I've seen of anyone.
Yeah.
And he didn't even know the photo was being taken. It was just like. Yeah. Somebody just went, oh, that's a geezer from Impractical Jokers, and just took a picture of him just fucking inhaling this burger. It was like it was his Ed Miliband moment. Do you know what I mean? It was horrible. So, yeah, I know what you mean. I get scared about that. I also get scared.
I know what you meme.
I know what you mean.
Yeah, nice. There you go.
You've been doing a lot of those recently.
Yeah, that's all I got.
No, but it's good. It's really good. He's sort of
organic.
He's quiet. Yeah. Yeah. Gets excited whenever somebody starts talking about anything other than hip hop and occasionally does a pun. That's kind of. Speaking of puns, though. You fucking love a pun, don't you?
I do love a pun, you know. I reckon it's getting boring for some people.
No, like, I don't think
it's been relentless for like.
It has been. So, is that.
Almost
how did this come about? I mean, we should talk about your music, but let's talk about this first of all. What is the deal?
Do you know what? I think it just comes from before Instagram. I used to, like, some of my close friends will know that I used to love writing captions on photographs.
Right.
It's just a thing of mine.
Yeah.
Don't know where it came from. I think it just comes from. Just trying all the time to be a lyricist.
Yeah.
Use words to some creative degree. And I started doing that, and then I remember, do you know, the first person, the person that told me to get Instagram was Example. He was my first follower.
Right.
He was like, because I used to love a pun or two on Twitter.
Yeah.
And then Example's like, you should get Instagram. So I got Instagram. He was my first follower. And then it's just become, I don't know, it's just become a thing of mine to just practice, just to practice being a lyricist.
Right.
That's all it is, you know. And it's just nice that it's entertaining for some people.
People will know that you did part one of Night Elm on Mare Street, right?
Yeah, really recently, end of last year, end of 2019.
Featuring a stellar lineup of guests.
Yeah.
I mean,
including yourself.
Yeah, that's what,
that's what you meant by stellar.
I didn't get the call.
You didn't get the call?
No.
I left a message. You don't check
that's
your voice.
That's a shame, That is a shame. But it's an amazing record, man.
Thank you very much. Mike's back, nigga, listen up. I get it popping like snacks in the cinema. If life's good, celebrate, get liquored up. But if the glass is half full, get a bigger cup. You don't want to get taken for a little mug. But when the tax man comes, you got to give it up. Stick them up. But you've got to be rich enough to get a woman that's a fox like Vivica. Or Serena Williams with a bigger bum. When they see the millions, they'll give you some. They'll agree to come round for a little fun. But if you get little funds, you might get a pity fuck. I ain't saying it's only money that women love. But I've had my fair share of gold diggers, bruv. Now I'm back to the bars that my niggas love. And I drop it on the streets like a little bug.
Your attention to detail with lyrics is something that, one, I think people really love about you, but two, I think people feel like that's a bit of a lost art at the moment, or it just feels like there isn't as much prominence being put on that as maybe in the past, right? Is that something you're conscious of?
It's something that I've been conscious of even when I started rapping. I could kind of sense a shift anyway.
Right.
Jay-Z had warned me about it on the Black Album.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I wanted to rhyme like Common Sense. I sold 5 mil and I ain't rhymed like Common Sense. Do you know what I mean? People were dropping breadcrumbs before I really was, you know, that serious about it, before I, you know, started to even forge a career in it. So it's always been something that's kind of apparent to me, that the lyricism is, like you said, an art that seems to be dying, but there are people that are still dropping gems that you can cut. Even though it's more rare, it's not non-existent, which is a good thing.
Yeah. You're somebody who, we've all had that experience of listening to a tune that we've listened to loads, and then suddenly you get a metaphor, or you go, oh, that's what that is. Do you know what I mean? That's an amazing feeling. Music isn't sort of being listened to, I bang on about this so much, but it's much more disposable now. That's the way a lot of people listen to it. And so those things that reward attention are sort of have fallen by the wayside a little bit, haven't they?
Yeah, it feels so much better when people come to me to say, you know, I just got a line that you put on a tune, you know, 6 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, I genuinely don't lose any respect for them, because I dug deep. It's almost like creating a treasure hunt.
Yeah.
You'd feel angry at yourself if people found the treasure too early.
Yeah.
You know, you think, oh, I'm not really good at hiding things. And that's what I want to do. I think part of lyricism is being able to hide something within something else.
Yeah.
And just letting people find it for themselves. But there's no time limit on when you find. So, an example for me was Lupe Fiasco. He used to just go deep within. It was like lyrical inception.
Yeah.
You know, you think of the first metaphor, you just go deeper. You know, you think of something else. And he's been like possibly the biggest inspiration on my lyricism.
Really? Yeah. So he's like the rapper's rapper, isn't he?
And I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. And again, like kind of forgotten, you know.
What's the deal with that? Because when he dropped his first album, everybody was so excited. And it doesn't, I mean, Lasers, people gave him a lot of shit for, didn't they?
Yeah, I wasn't really a fan of Lasers personally.
Yeah.
I really liked the first two.
Yeah.
Food and Liquor and Lupe Fiasco's The Call.
Yeah.
You know?
The Call, what an album, man.
That album changed my life in more ways than one. I remember Maharishi, Dr. Romanelli and Lupe Fiasco, they did this three-way collaboration. They released this silk satin jacket, bomber jacket with all the artwork embroidered in like gold stitching. It was like a pink silk lining with like a black outer.
Yeah.
It was the pengest jacket, right? I got it from
expensive.
It really was, but I had a mate who was working at the Maharishi sample sale, at the time. And even there, it was expensive. But then he gave me a little discount. And it was one of those things, it was still expensive, but it was a lot cheaper than it should have been.
Yeah.
So this jacket, there was an older, I used to hang around in the Beauvoir estate, and there was another estate next to ours. And, you know, we used to sort of plot in there sometimes. And, you know, you just looked up to the guys in the most, the sickest guys, you know. People kind of saw through you when you were younger, you know, but then I dropped this jacket one time. And I just felt like a somebody, because he was like, right, that jacket's heavy. And I was like, yeah, okay, cool. And that was, yeah, that's why I feel like that album not only changed my life musically, but Lupe Fiasco gave me a real sense of like individualism when it came to style as well. You know, getting dressed in the fucking morning, you know.
Yeah.
So I owe a lot to that guy. And I feel like the first episode that I appeared on, I never really paid homage to him,
right,
to be honest.
Has that been playing on your mind ever since?
It has, actually. That's been the main reason I wanted to come back.
Well, it's good for you to sort of come back here and put that to bed, because I know, you know, we've been talking about it a lot, and you're saying, look, man, I just don't know why I didn't big up Lupe the way I needed to on that first time, and it's sort of...
Maybe that's why he's sort of gone a bit quiet.
I think that might be, actually. That might be the reason for the hiatus. But he is coming back.
Yes, he is. Yeah.
He's playing the UK in June or July.
Yeah, I filmed with him in America.
Sick.
And we did this thing where I went to his gig, and he took me out on stage with him at this gig in LA, just for, like, for shits and giggles.
Yeah.
And then... There were people in that crowd that knew his lyrics backwards, right? And listen, I love lyrics, but there's no way I had that in my locker, right? And so he was going up to people in the front row and giving them the mic, and they were like spitting perfectly.
Mm.
And I just started shitting myself. I can't enjoy this gig, because what if this fucking guy, what if he comes over? Like, I could do the chorus of Superstar. But
I can imagine you belting that out as well.
I'd like to hear that.
That's within your range. I bet it is. I bet you can do it full settle.
Yeah.
But secretly, you're a heavy singer.
But it's like he's one of those that whenever you talk to people that like him love him. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I wonder if he feels like he hasn't got what he deserves in terms of, like, because he's ploughing his own furrow, isn't he? Very much. I mean, he's into the martial arts, and he's got his own thing, hasn't he? Very much so. And like...
I think he's an underrated... He's a forefather of a certain type of MC, myself included, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah.
You know? Without songs like Kick Push, I don't think I'd have written songs like Dirty Rider about cycling. Obviously, you know, granted, it's not about skateboarding, but it was about my... passion,
yes,
you know.
First got it when he was six, didn't know any tricks. Matter of fact, first time he got on it, he slipped, landed on his hip and busted his lip. For a week he had to talk with a list like this. Now we can end the story right here, but shorty didn't quit, it was something in the air. Yeah, he said it was something so appealing, he couldn't fight the feeling, something about it. He knew he couldn't doubt it, couldn't understand it, branded since the first kickflip he landed. Labeled a misfit, a bandit, cocoon, cocoon. His neighbors couldn't stand it, so.
Because it was an unusual thing to hear a song about. I know skateboarding and hip hop have got a connection.
Yeah, there is a tacit link.
But to have somebody do a song about it, it was unusual, wasn't it?
Absolutely, it was incredible though. It was so catchy. I remember seeing him doing it live round the corner.
Yeah.
At Deal Real, and. Just, I idolized him for a while, you know.
Yeah.
It was his ability to be so. Do you remember Gold Watch?
Yeah.
When he just lists all the shit he likes. That's just such a sick concept for a song, you know.
Yeah.
And obviously, the whole concept of rap for a while was to list shit you like.
Yeah.
But it was more expensive cars, and watches, and jewelry, and promiscuity, and that's all very well and good, but. He was like Monocle magazine, and he opened my eyes to a lot of shit, you know, just through that song.
Yeah.
Just through that song. Yoji Yamamoto. I'd never heard of Yoji Yamamoto before Lupe Fiasco mentioned him.
Yeah.
Even, you know, and then he took it retro.
Yeah.
Talking about who he likes to play Street Fighter with.
Yeah.
It was just incredible.
Like Yoji Yamamoto when I max roll solo. Leather Gucci belts and Guilty Brotherhood polos. I like Mont Blanc pins and Moleskine paper. I like Goyard.
bags and green ventilators. Monocle magazine and Japanese manga. Futura Nosferatu's and HDM trainers. I love Street Fighter 2. I just really hate Zangief, only Ken and Ryu. I find it hard to be Blanka, keep a wee ninja.
You know, I see that in stand-up, you know, because in stand-up, when I'm writing stuff, you sort of think, well, what do people, you know, the mistake is to write what people you think people expect of you.
Yeah.
And actually sort of think, well, I'm into this, and I don't think people know that I'm into that.
Yeah.
And it's a weird thing to be into. And then you think, well, fuck it, I'm just going to talk about it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's that, it's liberating, isn't it? Because nobody's going to be, that's how you achieve individuality, isn't it? When you're not afraid to sort of go, this is what I'm into.
Absolutely.
Or this is who I am or whatever, you know?
Absolutely.
But it's as easy and as difficult as that, basically. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it just takes the guts, isn't it?
Yeah.
Everyone likes something.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that there's just not enough, there, you know, not everybody who is passionate about something is willing to speak on it.
Yeah, yeah.
And the, you know, the talented few, some of them aren't, they don't really have anything that they're that passionate about.
Yeah.
So they'll use their talent to, like you said, say what they expect people, what they think people expect them
yes,
to say.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there are, and then there are people like Lupe.
Yeah.
That are just completely individual.
Yeah. And yourself, obviously. I mean, you are. There's no doubt that you're an individual, man. Do you know what I mean? So it's like,
yeah, even after 50 minutes of me just saying that, like, Lupe Fiasco basically cut my whole pattern. No, I'm joking. I'm joking. No, I do feel, I've in some weird way, I do feel individual
yeah.
because of me. Just, I guess I didn't copy anything of Lupe's. I just copied just the kind of the desire to actually say
yeah.
it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. By the way, when you had that nice jacket, this is the thing I used to get nervous about. How old were you when you had that jacket?
Oh, I must have been in my late teens, early 20s.
Right.
Early 20s.
So I used to get nervous. You know when you get a nice jacket or a nice thing and you're at a train station? This happened to me and a couple of mates. And then a bloke, you know, like one of them, like a bloke from round your way who's a fucking nutcase.
Yeah.
Will come up to you and go, bro, can I try that jacket on?
Oh, my God.
And you know...
That's it.
That's it.
Yeah.
You're never going to see that. It's horrible. That feeling of going, I'm basically giving you this. It happened to me. And you,
what was the jacket?
It was some moody Ralph jacket with like a three-legged horse on it. Whatever. But like,
makes it satisfying.
But like, it happened to a mate of mine. And I remember saying to my mate, I've never fucking let that happen to me. As soon as I got asked, I handed it over with my jeans.
Bowing. Yeah. Bowing backwards.
Being, I think, I don't know very many people that weren't at least victims of an attempted robbery. You're right. You know, there were the lucky few that were the actual perpetrators.
Yeah.
That were the robbers themselves. But yeah, it's one of the most horrible feelings, you know. I can remember two examples of actually being robbed, but one example of not having it. And
right.
just being on the train and this person just trying to rob me in front of like a crowded train of passengers. And me just being so kind of naive, I guess, that I didn't realise that they were trying to rob me. So I was literally just giving them like, just flatly going, no.
Yeah.
I had a brand new Nike beanie.
Right.
And it was so much more precious because we weren't even allowed to wear brand name stuff to the school I went to.
Right.
So it was like you put it on in secret when you got out of school. And this guy got on, and it was like Northwest London, innit? And
right.
I already knew about that kind of those ends at the time, you know. And he was like, yeah, that's a nice hat. Let me try it on. I was like, no. But the reason I said no, wasn't even because I thought he was going to try and rob me. It's because I thought I don't want hair lice on my shirt. You might have lice.
Yeah.
I'd been taught so much about hair lice by that time that I was just like...
You were so optimistic, you thought you were going to get that hat back and it'd be dirty.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And what did he say when he said no?
He was like, come on, bro, let me just try it on. I was like, nah. In the end, he just gave up and got off.
That's amazing. I never would have the guts. Well, then you didn't know, though, Jeremy.
Didn't know, exactly. That's the thing. So it's not really bravery if you don't know.
It's bravery in the absence of understanding.
Yeah, exactly.
Night on Mare Street, you sort of talk a lot about... Obviously, Michael's back. You know, that's the whole thing about it. You've been away. And what was the... Sort of you allude to it on that record that you were feeling, I guess, what, uninspired? Or you felt like you didn't want to create anything. What exactly happened?
It was a mixture of things, I guess. It was just you get to a point in your career or whatever, you know, the spell of being creative, where too many negative things have happened against the positive things, right. or you just start remembering the negative things. They seem to have so much more gravitas.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I just got tired. For a multitude of reasons, you know. And decided for a while that I wasn't gonna rap anymore.
Really?
Yeah. And then decided that I was. It was kind of as simple as that. You know, I try not to be too profound in the reasons for doing things, because sometimes there isn't really that profound a reason.
Yeah.
I just got bored of it because I thought that, you know, I'd had some negative experiences, and a part of me thought that people don't even want to hear it.
I was on the brink of packing it in. Things were getting ugly, but the ting's attractive again. They were saying, what's wrong with pain? What's happened to him? You couldn't get a longer wait from a rack at a gym. The wait's over. Sorry about the delay. Our fans never want to see us leave like a gilet. But when it all starts to take the piss, you need a wee break. I've met more arseholes in this shit than a bidet.
What negative experience did you have? Because I know, I don't know how much.
Being dropped from the label was like the big one,
right?
You know, that changes your life. You know, you think it won't, because you know, I look back on it, and in hindsight, I'd only been signed for a small percentage of my actual career,
right?
But it does change your life. It gives you such a big safety net.
Yeah.
It gives you such a blanket.
You've got a feeling in the back of your head of legitimacy, of like, you know, you're a. You've almost got the validation that you're signed, right?
Okay. And the future just looks so much brighter,
right,
as a result of it. Because whether we like it or not, money is the gauge of people's interest, isn't it? And if someone says to you, you're so good at rapping that I'm literally going to give you some money.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah,
it's
a
weird concept.
Totally,
you as a comedian
it.
Will understand.
Mate, the first time I got booked for a weekend club, right, and they paid for my hotel for the two nights. It was only like a travelodge. I jumped up and down on that bed. I couldn't believe that they wanted me to come and do comedy much that it would pay for me to have somewhere to stay for two nights. It blew my mind.
It's
I totally
mental.
Get it, man.
Right.
I totally get it.
So getting this advice, it changes your mentality,
right?
You know? I feel like I didn't do it in an arrogant way, but I just felt like the future was bright.
Yeah.
You know, people actually believe in
you're on a trajectory.
Yeah.
This is the start of your upwards trajectory,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, there were people that when, like you said, you get that validation from the label, and there were people that once I was on this platform, once I had this label backing me, were very attentive and were very responsive and would get back to me, have conversations with me. Those same people were nowhere to be seen after a while.
Right.
When you know,
chasing it down.
You know, when I'm sort of independent and I'm trying to holler at the same people. And you try not to be bitter about it, but it does great on you.
Were you surprised by these people? Was it people that you
absolutely?
Sort of,
because I thought to myself, I'm no less talented.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I am no less talented.
Yeah.
A company just decided that we are not working together anymore. That's all it boils down to, isn't it? When you
get
dropped from
the
label, you're no less talented.
No, you haven't suddenly changed. But like, I found it almost the other way. Like when I first started doing telly. And then, like, I suddenly started getting booked easier. I think to myself, I get why this is happening, but I'm not any better than before I did the show. Do you know what I mean? It's those weird, like, signifiers that people have to have. And it's like, because you assume that people have bought into you because they like what you do.
You do.
And because they think you're talented.
Exactly.
And they buy into what it is. And then when, for whatever reason, they don't get in touch with you or they don't respond to you, sort of go, oh, so actually what you're into was the status that I held at that point. Do you know what I mean? And that is a... Because the other thing is you feel like... I feel like, and you must feel like, you feel like you're always going to be able to see through it.
Yeah.
But you're not. That's the truth of it. People are very good at seeming sincere in how much they care about you and how invested they are in you. But the truth is a lot of it is bullshit. Do you know
absolutely
what I mean? It is bullshit, but it's hard. It's difficult. Some people you expect it from, and you sort of go, I sort of think to myself now, there are some people that I know for a fact, if I fall out of favour with the channels or whatever, I won't hear from them again. And I expect that, and I won't even begrudge them that. But there are some people that if they stop getting, I would be
surprised.
Like,
actually shocked.
Yeah.
offended is such a horrible word now, isn't it? Yeah. But you would be in the most natural sense quite offended.
Is that because they become friends over a period of time? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Absolutely. Yeah. And they seem so sincere. Mm. And you also feel, I guess, a bit disappointed in yourself for having not seen it.
I know.
You know?
Yeah.
You do feel a mixture of feelings, and I guess the sort of intro to this album, Night Elm on Mare Street, was just me observing.
Yeah.
And me giving reasons as to why I did take some time away and at one point really consider quitting.
And did you know what you were... Was it, I'm quitting because I want to do this, or was it, I'm quitting because fuck this, I'm just quitting and I'll figure out what I'm going to do after?
Yeah,
this.
It was more the latter.
Right.
It was I'm still going to be creative, you know, but maybe really sincerely chasing a rap career isn't for me anymore, you know?
Had you started to weigh up options what you would do then?
I think, like, I was just naturally... I'd started managing an artist at one point and co-writing with her and stuff like that. So like I said, I was always involved in lyricism and always wanted to be, but at some points just didn't want to be a rapper anymore. Do you know what I mean? But now I do.
And what was the trigger for that?
Good question, you know. I actually can't pinpoint it.
Right.
I think I just thought, I don't know, maybe
you did a week's supply teaching and you thought, fuck it, I'm not doing it. I need to rap again.
I just missed it.
I did it kind of like the reverse of how Eminem did it in 8 Mile.
Right,
I've got a job in a plant.
Oh my God, I really need to make this hip-hop career take off, man.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com, code program.
Coming back, you went away because, you know, you talk about the label and you felt like you weren't as motivated anymore. And so then your instincts might be, when you come back, to go, well, what's the sound that everybody's into now? And now I'm going to sort of think about, this is my comeback now. How am I going to make this bigger? How am I going to come back bigger? And you have come back bigger, but creatively. And you've made I've heard both of them now, and they're both amazing records. I think it's the best stuff you've ever done.
Thank you.
And I think a lot of people are saying, you know, it's not just my opinion means jack shit, but I know a lot of people are saying that. But what was your thought process? Because you haven't sort of tried to acquiesce to what's popular now, have you? I mean, you've
definitely... Not at all.
This is your thing. So what is...
Well, I think
how has that come about?
I've gone back to the whole... Sonically, the whole album, Part 1 and Part 2, you'll have heard, sound just like they're from the 80s, musically. Yeah. Anyway, the production was all created with... It was just... It's all electronic. It's all synth. It's all 808. And I kind of enlisted the production skills of three of my pals, and they are all very interested in 80s music, not just, you know, not just synth pop, not just, you know, synthy music, but, you know, film scores from the 80s. We all discovered that, we love, you know, Beverly Hills Cop. We love Back to the Future.
Yeah.
And a lot of the guys, in fact, most of the guys are younger than me, but they just have this, like, it's almost like they're older than their years, you know. They really, really appreciate 80s culture. So they were the perfect guys to kind of have create this record with me. And I decided that with that kind of nostalgic music, I would write about stuff that was happening before now. You know, I didn't really want to kind of rap too much about what's going on now. It all had to kind of have that nostalgic edge lyrically, you know, for me. So obviously the album starts with me saying, telling people why I took a break and whatnot. Yeah. But then the rest of the album is it starts with me, how my fashion sense was, my sense of style was kind of formed, you know, who I looked up to, and that it makes me feel nostalgic listening to it. And I just kind of hope, you always put out a record hoping that, you know, through some keywords people will be able to relate. But it is very personal.
Yeah.
This is one of those rare occasions when the bouncers see that you're wearing trainers and tracksuits, but still let you and your gang through. You pissed off some well-dressed dudes in that queue. Fuck them. If they ever get into the function, I'll be at the bar where the alcohol's free and the horniest woman in the city of London is trying to get drunk with a capital D. A lot of dudes looking really dapper in here. I look like I'm in the pub having a beer. So if she leaves here with a tramp with a beard, I'll be GQ's worst dressed man of the year.
80s is cool because whether or not you're listening to it and you could be in your mid-20s or you could be in your late teens, you will have had some sort of, even if it's just a brief insight into 80s culture, you probably have seen, I don't know, Home Alone. It was, I think that going up from an 80s angle was the perfect, it's what I relate to the most,
right.
And I feel that it's had the most lasting effects on culture up until this point, that decade.
And is that something you're going to keep, are you going to keep with that thing going forward, or is it these two albums?
I think it's just this, because it's one album but it's two parts, so I think it will pretty much be the Night Elm on Main Street part one and part two.
Right.
And then we'll think of the next direction when the next record comes.
Yeah.
Did you sample any 80s tunes? Or?
We didn't, no. We just, you know, we listened to a lot of 80s music, you know, around the time that we were, I listened to 80s music all the time, but we consciously, you know,
inspired,
soaked up stuff, you know, around the time we were making the
album. I mean, that's the reason why. That's one of the main reasons why I love Stranger Things so much.
Oh, same.
Do you know what I mean? It's just that sort of, whenever you see a show that's set in that time, you just get drawn to it straight away.
Absolutely.
I'll forgive a... I mean, Stranger Things is brilliant anyway, regardless of its time setting, but, you know, you're already in, aren't you, when you sort of see that it's got that vibe about it or whatever. Yeah, it's a great record, man. And being dropped by the label, did they... Are you not in I take it you're not in touch with anyone from that label now?
No, I made some really good friends being on a major label. One of my best friends, Rachel, was my product manager at the label. So I didn't sort of come away from the experience with absolutely nothing. I actually, you know, in the grand scheme of things, like I said, there was balance in it. There were a lot of negatives, but it just happens to have been the negatives that, you know, pushed me away from rap. They seemed to outweigh the positives, but one of the massive positives, don't get me wrong, was my good friend Rachel.
Right.
So, and there are other people that I met along the way.
So it's not, it wasn't as cutthroat as you turn up in the foyer and you can't get in through the door and
then
and goes, you can just get the fuck out.
I say it wasn't, but in essence, it's like you don't even, you know, everything's done by email anyway,
right?
So and at the time I had a manager, so it was kind of, the conversation was had with him
yeah
as well, so it, you know, someone else kind of breaks the news to you,
right?
and stuff, you feel shut out even more than if it was physically going to a building, because you're like, because that is in essence like, don't even come to the building.
yeah, you change address.
It feels a bit like that, you know.
I remember I did a run through for Channel 4, and for this new show, and it was for me hosting, and I did the run through, and I thought it'd gone well, and everybody said all the right things and said, "God, Ramesh, like, you can host and like blah blah blah," and then I found out via email that Channel 4 had liked it and gone forward with it with every single person involved, with one exception.
Wow,
and that feeling. Is one, you feel angry because you sort of think, first of all, everything that I was told in that room was bullshit, and secondly, you doubt yourself, and being made to doubt yourself, you sort of think, oh, okay, maybe I'm just not good at, I went through like a period of just sort of thinking. I'll be honest with you, I did think about quit. I've thought about quitting a lot, actually, to be honest with you. Yeah. But like, that was one of the times where I really thought, oh, okay, I can't. Everybody else, there's a message there. Everybody else is good enough to carry on, except for you. You can't help but think to yourself, you know, what am I going to? Should I carry on doing this?
Yeah, and it would be genuinely. You'd have to be a sociopath.
Yes,
that
exactly.
Not to shake your faith in yourself.
Exactly.
You'd have to be a sociopath.
Yeah, exactly. And like, you sort of go. I always think about, you know, you're supposed to. I know comedians that started out at the same time as me, and they were great, and they gave up, right? And so whenever I watch X Factor or something like that, and somebody comes on who's obviously got some sort of mental issues, but they seem to have no problem with putting them on TV, but they sort of like, they sort of sing terribly and they're awful, and people go, why doesn't somebody tell them they're shit? And you go, well, hold on a minute. They're chasing their dream. They are believing it despite what anybody else tells them, right? And somebody else will come on, like some star, and they go, people are telling me no, but I just kept on going for it. And we respect those people because we think they're good. So if you're going to respect those people, you've also got to respect that person who's absolute dog shit because they are ignoring all of the evidence. They're ignoring what everyone's telling them and they're following their dream. And you have to respect that. Sorry, they're shit, but you have to take the rough with the smooth.
You've
got to
respect it. You do
have
to respect it.
And then I start thinking, am I one of those people? Maybe I'm one of those people that's fucking appalling and they're putting me on stuff for novelty value. You got to see this guy. He thinks he could do stand-up. You'll not believe it. You got to see. Look, watch how shit this geezer is.
I've 100% for like 1 second of my life thought that at one point. Am I one of those guys?
It's hard, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Some things just shake you to your core. You know, they do shake your faith to your core. And I think that tenacity is... that tenacity of that, like you were saying, that sort of a section of people on X Factor.
Yeah.
Everyone could do with a sprinkle even.
Yes, 100%, 100%. Because that self-doubt it's horrible.
Yeah.
It's fucking horrible. How happy have you been with the response to part one?
Oh, ecstatic, man. Yeah. I love the fact that, you know, what it is that it's nice to see that so many people who are big fans of the first album have heard the second album.
Yes.
That's the main thing I've got from it. And the whole experience has been great. We did a show at the Moth Club, like the album in its entirety. And I've always wanted to do a show like that, you know, where you just do a body of work. You don't do
necessarily... Did you do chat in between and stuff? Or?
Well, what we did was, because it was at Moth Club, the scene was lovely. It's an old veterans club.
Yeah. Rupert,
I do gigs
there. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Right. You run a gigger.
So you'll know exactly the aesthetic. Yeah. And it's just so 80s, isn't it? You know?
Yeah.
So I thought the mood has to be right. Mm. In between the album songs, I decided to play stuff like... Computer Love, for instance.
Right,
you know, songs from the 80s that kind of had some connection, be it, you know, conceptually, or in like production-wise, to the songs from my album. So I think it just added to the experience. And one thing that anyone who made a comment about the gig were like, it was an ingenious touch putting those songs from that era in between your songs from the album. Because one thing I did realise as well was that the live show came quite soon after the album.
Right.
And, you can't expect people, you can't expect everyone who listens to music to listen to music on the same day of release.
It's got to be, it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because you want to tour that, or you want to do that show, that gig, that album live, but you've got to give enough time for people to soak it
up.
This
is the thing. So I needed to, I wanted to kind of create a good enough experience for people who hadn't, I didn't want to make anyone feel guilty for having not listened to the whole album. So I wanted them to feel entertained. So you stick a load of shit that everyone can sing along to in between the songs, and everyone's happy. Do you know what I mean?
That's a good shout, man.
And they were nice and warm for every song.
Did that my stand up?
Yeah, you could try that.
Just play someone else's jokes.
Yeah.
And now here's Richard Pryor.
Yeah, Richard Pryor.
I know my new stuff's not very good, but you should have seen Chappelle's show. Let me just put that on for you now. Funny, right?
And then okay, back to me.
That would be an incredible comedy.
You see Chappelle talking about that? Confusing. I'm going to talk about that in a less funny way. Get ready.
The English type.
So that's how that topic could be funny.
Yeah. Really hard to follow.
Oh, that's the worst, though. When you're at a gig and somebody else is doing something in the same subject area as you and you're about to go and you think, oh, God, I can't talk about the same shit.
Yeah, that must be nause. That must be a nause. I've never really thought about that with comedy.
Yeah, it's not
you
great.
You can just say, I've got a better take on this.
You can
say that.
Just diss them. Come out and just diss the comedian.
So that was, that was a route one. That was a route one angle on it. Yeah. How about, I'm going to talk about it with a little bit, a little thing I like to call nuance. Here we go. I've got to ask you this because you mentioned it. Beverly Hills Cop 3. Have you seen it?
Wait, which one is that?
It's the one at the theme park.
It is the one at the theme park, yeah. Wonderland.
They're doing a new
Wonderland.
One.
They're doing another one, yeah. Beverly Hills Cop 4. Beverly Hills Cop 3, it broke my fucking heart, man.
What, did you think it was shit?
Come on, mate.
I don't think I've seen it.
I don't remember
it
being shit.
Is it like a baddie running a theme park?
They were... Basically, it was money out of a thing. It was a front. Yeah. It was a front, and the guy, the Walt Disney of it was Uncle Dave, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Uncle Dave!
I don't remember it at all.
Mate,
and do you remember the scene where he's on the big wheel and he's jumping from...
Yeah, he's jumping from thing to thing. That was actually quite good.
That was really good.
Fuck yeah, that was good. But
and when he doesn't he punch up one of the mascots?
Yeah. Oh my god, that shit.
This big bits in Beverly Hills Cop 3.
Couple of highlights.
Yo, mate, do you know what? You just said two things. I think this might be the best film I've ever seen in my life. I can't believe
that film is sick. I actually really like. But the thing is, I saw Beverly Hills Cop 3 when I was still really young,
right?
And I've come to realise, even growing up, that my bar is low, man.
Yeah.
People are like, "That was shit," and I'm like, "What?"
Yeah. Well, I remember I've been banging on to people about Golden Child.
Love that film.
I love that film. But everybody I've said that to.
Yeah, says, everyone remembers it. Have you watched it?
Yeah, it's absolutely one of the worst films of all time.
Have you watched it since?
I'll be honest with you, the special effects obviously have suffered.
Yeah.
There's no getting around that. But Eddie Murphy's hilarious in it. I mean, he's unbelievable in it. Only a man whose heart is pure can wield the knife. And only a man whose ass is narrow can get down these steps. And if mine is such an ass, then I shall have it. I mean, come on, mate. Fucking great.
He's a genius.
And then he's on the plane, and he's got that woman on there. He's going, Hamakanas, Hamakanas. Offered him the weird meat. Oh, it's fucking great.
Yeah.
Hamakanas, Hamakanas. I'm fine, thank you.
That film is quite... Some of the shit in that film is quite scary.
Yes, terrifying.
When I remember blood coming out of something.
Mate, the porridge.
Yeah!
Oh my God!
Who thinks of that?
Yeah. Horrible.
Bro.
So much so, right, that somebody gave me some rice pudding and I put my spoon in it and this red jam came out from underneath. And
scream.
I said to my brother, it's like the porridge and Golden Child.
Yeah.
And he got it and I feel like that's why we're family, man.
Shit's enough to
I mean, there's
put
other
you
reasons,
off.
But there's only a niche number of people that would get that reference.
Absolutely.
You know, it's like the porridge and Golden Child.
Absolutely.
Please, if you're listening, watch Golden Child. It's a great
movie. Yeah, and for some reason, it makes me think of Big Trouble in Little China.
Mate,
yeah,
I watched that the other night.
I haven't seen it since I was a kid.
I fucking love that film, man. There's a bit, so it's so ridiculous, by the way. I remember it thinking it was ridiculous at the time, but it's even more ridiculous
watching it now.
Because he just goes and he's gambling with some guy, this Chinese guy in Chinatown, right? And then he goes, I've got to go pick up my girlfriend from the airport, this girl. And he goes, oh, I'll come with you. Takes him to the airport. She immediately gets kidnapped. Literally within seconds of arriving in the United States, she gets kidnapped. He jumps into his truck. He follows him. And there's like a 15-minute sequence where Kurt Russell and his mate are just sitting in their truck watching shit go down. They're not even... They're just sat there.
I remember.
Yeah, he's going, this is crazy shit.
Lot of
yeah, the guy budget. Comes down with the electricity and then, like, it's oh, yeah. fucking wearing mad.
Was that yeah. have a big pointy hat?
Yeah, yeah, the
yeah,
big,
yeah like hat. Raiden.
Yeah, yeah.
Raiden, it's, yeah. Like, it's Raiden. It's, he's got the Raiden. They're all Raiden. They're all Raiden.
Everyone squad Raiden.
The weirdest bit is where, at the end, when they sort of save the girls or whatever, because he's trying to find green-eyed girls or whatever, and he reacts like these two women are the only green-eyed girls. I mean, green-eyed girls are not that rare. Do you know what I mean?
It was, sure, it was if, he, in if the he'd 80s. Gone to Ireland.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
He could have found
yeah,
loads.
Just book yeah. some tickets. Go to Dublin.
Yeah.
Big have your fill. In Dublin.
Yeah, that would have been a great sequel. Suddenly he realises, oh, actually...
Let's do it.
I've been
Let's do
waiting
it.
In America turns out to have been a big mistake. I was sort of trying to get into the accent without being racist there.
What accent was that? Irish.
It was. I can't remember the name of the demon guy in it, but
80s American Far Eastern, I think is. The...
Yes, yeah. It's a great movie though.
Yeah.
And then, it sets up for a sequel because he's in the truck, and then the camera sort of pans across, and there's the monster is sort of hiding. On the back of the truck.
Yeah.
That's the end. That's the final.
Damn,
shot
I need
of
to watch
film.
That film again.
It's a good film. You got to watch it.
I want to revisit all of the 80s things. And number one, just decide, was that film really shit?
Yeah,
and I know.
Was I just think, because of the time?
I think if we sit down and watch Golden Child, we're going to think it's shit. I've not seen it since, but we'll see. I'd love to think it still holds up. And I'm excited about Beverly Hills Cop 4.
Yeah.
Are you
yes.
excited about
yeah,
it?
I am, generally.
Yeah.
Have you seen My Name is
Coming
Dolomite?
To America as well.
Yeah, that'll be good. I gigged with Arsenio Hall in America, right?
He's fucking funny, isn't he?
He is, really funny. He did this thing where, like, he said, I'd really like to introduce you as, like, a British comedian. You know, like, he goes, I want to co-sign you at this gig. So I went, all right. I mean, I didn't go, all right. I went, fucking, of course, right, man. That'd be amazing. Unfortunately, it went pretty badly because I thought that Arsenio was going to introduce me on. I'd open for him, and then he would come on and smash it.
Yeah.
He went on.
Oh shit.
Did his stuff. Got a standing ovation as he walked on, as he would do. Then... Ripped the arse out of the gig and then forgot my name. So it was such a horrendous.
Sort of
so he smashed the shit out of the gig. Bearing in mind we're in LA, nobody knows who the fuck I am, right? Smashes the gig, standing ovation. And then he goes and. Oh shit.
British guy.
There's this British guy.
It's the Golden Child.
He's great. Come on up, Rajesh. And then I go up and just fucking eat shit for 10 minutes.
Damn, still.
Yeah, that's how that story went. So anyway, I'm gonna, it's gonna be a bittersweet experience for me watching Going Coming back. To America too.
Yeah, for real, actually.
Plug one, plug two. Guest plugs for you.
Listen, man, we're out of time.
Oh, man, it's been... Thank you so much.
It feels
for
like it's gone
me,
super quick. Yeah, right?
It does. It really does.
Can we do a part three?
I'd love to do a part three. This time next year.
Yeah.
Or, like, in the exact amount of time that it took to do this one after doing number one.
Okay, how long was that?
Beverly Hills Cop 4 will be available by then.
Yeah. How long was that, though? How long ago was it you last did it?
Probably 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, 3 years.
Okay. So we'll see you in 3 years. What have you got coming up next?
Coming up is mainly part two. Night Elm on Main Street part two is out in May.
Okay.
But there's going to be some singles up until there.
And are you doing live shows?
Hopefully tour part one and part two.
Okay.
I only did one headline show after part one.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping to tour part one and part two. In the meantime. Part one of The Night Elm on Main Street is out to stream on all platforms, and all my old music is as well.
Yeah.
I think that's people do forget about all the old stuff they've done. My shit is dope. You know what I mean? Even the stuff I dropped in like 2014, it's heavy, you know? So I think just in the meantime, up and leading up to part two, people just listen to my old shit, whether it's The Night Elm on Main Street part one, Blame Miss Barkley, whatever, just listen to my old shit.
Okay, well, make sure you do that. And are you so you'll be doing live shows nearer the time then,
100% right? Yeah.
Okay, listen, man, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on.
Mate,
you are
likewise.
In the form of your life, so thank you for taking the time out to come and speak to us, man.
Thank
I really
you,
appreciate
man.
It
thank you both.